Welcome to the beginning of the super terrific happy hour.
Super terrific
happy hour.
Happy hour.
A bunch of us are talking about happy hour.
Yes, welcome to episode 79 of Super Terrific Happy Hour. My name is Matt Neal. I'm the movie reviewer here at the Warrnambool Standard. I'm joined by fellow pop culture vulture, Jono Peck.
Worst podcast ever.
Last week's was the worst podcast
this
we've ever done.
This will be so much better, because we're talking about The Simpsons.
Yeah, this is potentially our last one. If my baby arrives next week, then this is the last podcast we do. So we were kind of thinking, let's just pick a topic something we both enjoy, something we both like talking about. Mm. Where's our middle ground? We have been talking about Weezer a lot today, so it could have been that, but
it was kind of meant as a throwback to our second ever episode too.
Yes.
Because this is our potentially second last.
Oh, yes. I didn't even realize that kind of synchronicity.
The bookends.
Yeah. So our second episode was about when The Simpsons should have ended, basically, or should it have ended at a certain time. And I would probably back away a little bit from the comments I made in that podcast now, because...
Which was what?
Well, I think I said, they probably should have ended it about...
We said 15 years ago.
Well, yeah.
Which would have been, season 12?
Yeah, I think I said somewhere... Actually, it might have been Sean who was like hard and fast. It should have been season 12 or whatever. I said maybe you could let it go a little bit longer. But having spent a lot of time on a couple of Facebook groups lately about The Simpsons... And seeing so much vitriol for the new episodes and everyone just viewing all these old episodes with rose-colored glasses, this real just black and white view of it. Yeah, there's... I've kind of come around a bit to thinking and re-watching a lot of new episodes. I'm like, these aren't so bad, and I'm kind of starting to enjoy a lot of the new ones, so I'm backing away from it. Should have ended. I think it should run for as long as they physically can now, which I think was your... initial point,
yeah.
I think, wasn't it?
I said let it go on forever.
Yeah.
Just so it's always there.
Yeah. What happens when cast members die, though? Which they've kind of stumbled through a bit with... Phil Hartman died, and they got around that because he only had a couple of characters. Yeah. And now... I can't remember who it was that died. The voice of Ender Krabappel died, and I haven't noticed... conspicuous that she's not there, but I haven't really seen a lot of episodes since that happened.
Yeah. Well, there's other teachers... I guess.
Yeah, but who teaches Bart's class now?
I don't know if they've shown his class. I don't watch it.
Is it PC principal? But anyway, this is the point was we thought, right, second last pod.
Yeah.
Let's talk about The Simpsons in some basic kind of way.
So what's the gist of today?
Well, before we came in here, I think I said The Simpsons is the greatest show ever discussed.
Mm. Is that your actual opinion?
One of my favorite throwaway lines. Anytime anyone talks about MASH, and I love MASH, and my go-to line to defend MASH is MASH is the second greatest TV show ever, and then it kind of deflects things because they go, "What's the greatest?" I go, Simpsons.
Yeah.
You know, like it's not even an argument.
But MASH.
Yeah, no, MASH is brilliant. But
it's not the second best show ever.
I think it is.
Yeah, I think The Simpsons is the second best show ever.
Oh, really? Because you can say Seinfeld is the best show
it's
ever.
Yeah, Seinfeld.
Yeah,
it's definitely Seinfeld.
I can't quite come with that, but... which has had the bigger impact on pop culture?
That's interesting. That's what we're talking about today.
Yeah, there we go.
So, should we start with talking about The Simpsons' impact?
Yes, let's.
So, when The Simpsons and Seinfeld came onto the air in 1989, I believe the highest rating sitcom was Alf.
I was going to say The Cosby Show.
Yeah, I think that was the year before.
Okay.
But
that's the era we're looking
at. It was
The
Cosby Show and Alf. Yeah. So, it's your family-friendly puppet alien and rich black doctor family.
Well, they're both variations on the classic sitcom theme. You got with the family and the multi-camera setup, filmed in front of a live audience, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
And The Simpsons kind of took that approach to an animated series.
Yeah.
But pushed it.
It seems like such a given now. Someone was always going to do this. Yeah. It seems inevitable. The Simpsons, it seems like a pop culture inevitability that. Because, I mean, we'd had we'd had this before in a sense. Like the Flintstones and the Jetsons were kind of that nuclear family driven sitcom in an animated format.
But what were the cartoons of the 80s? The late 80s?
It was all about...
Because I know there was...
Cartoons were very much Saturday morning
kids' fare. Superheroes.
It was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
It was He-Man.
Yeah.
It was...
Transformers.
What are those bloody cats? Thundercats?
Yeah.
those kind of things. Yeah, Transformers. Yeah.
And then there was Bill Cosby had his own animated...
Oh, yeah.
What was that?
Fat Albert and Cosby Albert. Kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was... Yeah, and you had your Warner Brothers, Looney Tunes, and those kind of Hanna-Barbera kind of...
Disney.
Disney, yeah. Those kind
of nothing grounded, really, you can call The Simpsons grounded.
Well, yeah, but it was aimed at a slightly more mature audience, which was the big difference. That was the real thing. And this is probably the biggest legacy of The Simpsons, is that it opened up... It made it okay for grown-ups to like cartoons, you know, and not just in a nostalgic throwback kind of way.
And you can see that 30 years almost later with just the amount of series there are specifically for adults.
You've written a list down. Go for it.
So, obviously, there's the Futurama, which is another Matt Groening series. You've got obvious influences in stuff like Family Guy, American Dad, and then King of the Hill in the early 2000s. But now, like, definitely for adults only, you've got shows like Archer, BoJack Horseman.
Yep.
Seth MacFarlane's got a new series called Border Town, which I'm guessing is going to be...
It's only just come out. I've only seen his very little snippets of it, because I don't think it's actually aired anyway yet. But it's set on the American-Mexico border.
Okay.
And I'm guessing there's some really contentious stuff there, because it's Seth MacFarlane.
And there's a new Netflix series called F is for Family that's very adult as well. So it's stuff
but
that...
even going back, we had...
And South Park, of course.
Well, yeah, and South Park is the big one. South Park and Family Guy South Park started a bit before that, but it really leapt on the idea that, The Simpsons was for grown-ups, but let's push it further and make it really for grown-ups.
South Park was what parents were afraid The Simpsons was.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
it was like,
that's a really good way to put it.
Kids who weren't allowed to watch The Simpsons is because their parents thought it was pretty much what that first season of South Park actually was.
Yeah,
which
I was one of those kids who wasn't allowed to watch The Simpsons in the first couple of years.
Me too. Until my dad got really into it.
Probably. Yeah, yeah, and then they realized it wasn't that bad.
Yeah,
and it could be a lot worse. It could be South Park. but you know, even before South Park came along, there were other shows that took The Simpsons torch and tried to run it through that barrier as well. Duckman is a really good example.
Jason Alexander.
Yeah. And I'd kind of forgotten how grown up that was until I caught an episode the other night, reruns on Fox 8 or something. Mm. And that was surprisingly...
grown up?
Yeah. Surprisingly, some dark kind of twisted stuff in there. And the other one I was thinking of was... Oh, Beavis and Butthead, not necessarily adult, but... definitely, okay, this is for a more mature audience. Yeah.
Daria, same MTV.
Ren and Stimpy.
I watched that as a kid.
Yeah, I think that was more taking the... again, Simpsons laid the groundwork, I think, for Ren and Stimpy. But again, it was more pitching it at what if those Looney Tunes cartoons were done with a 90s vibe that could stretch the boundaries a little bit more.
Yeah, they were a little more gross.
Yeah, humor. A lot of gross out sort of stuff.
Yeah,
with kind of a mature edge. There was a nods and winks to things.
Okay, I was too young to watch them. But do you remember Dilbert and the Critic in the 90s?
Yeah, Dilbert was great. I used to really love Dilbert. Yeah, I must have been in my late teens watching that, because I don't know why I would have been watching a show that was set in an
office.
Yeah, like in an IT office or something. That was definitely a good one too.
And the Critic.
Don't remember watching The Critic, but that had a crossover with The Simpsons, didn't it?
John Lovett's character showed up.
Jay Sherman, I think.
Yeah, that's it.
There was another one too, Dr. Katz, which was famous because it was drawn in something called Squiggle Vision, which got really annoying to watch after a while. But that was another show that was trying to do the alt comedy thing as well.
Sure. So animation really took its took the lead from Simpsons.
Yeah, absolutely.
Since the 90s. But it's not just the animated series that have had impact from the cultural explosion of The Simpsons. The writing for The Simpsons has been really influential in live-action comedies and sitcoms in general. And you hear writers all the time quote The Simpsons, and they talk about how the writing on The Simpsons is, you know, what's influenced the way that they put their shows together. And the style of the gags, and even though, especially those early seasons, the frequency of the jokes, it was like, you know, there's a joke every 5 seconds or something crazy like that. And
yeah.
That's one of the things that the show doesn't so much accomplish anymore.
Well, I think it tries to, but I feel like it doesn't quite hit it as much. Yeah. But you know, again, that might be just nostalgia. But
I think it's now that it's like a forced joke every 5 seconds, whereas back then it was like, you know, as a kid you might not even realize one of the lines was funny, and it's just a line to get you to the next one. It's not like the punchline.
There's a really great example of that where there's one bit, it's a Krusty the Clown bit in, I think, in season 11, by the looks of this thing I've got on my phone in front of me now. That it's about 5 jokes in the space of one little spiel. It's Krusty the Clown. I can't do a Krusty impression. Kids! No. Kids, we need to talk for a moment about Krusty brand chew goo gum-like substance. We all knew it contained spider eggs, but the Hansa virus, that came out of left field. So if you're experiencing numbness and or comas, send $5 to Antidote, P.O. Box, and it gets cut off there. There's literally, I'm going to say, 6 gags in 3 lines there.
It's clever.
It's really good. And it's just the kind of, it's so, so such a good example of where stuff like The Simpsons just packed stuff in, and when they're on a roll, they were really on a roll.
And I think, I don't know how unique it was at the time, but the way that they set up their writing room sounds like something that's been replicated on other shows since then.
Where rather than, instead of scripts being written in isolation, someone has, I guess, basically a starting point or a starting script or a template or a treatment, sorry. And then everyone basically spitballs it.
Yep. So you'll get the writing credit for it, but everyone's really pitched in.
Yeah, and that's where apparently guys like George Meyer was the king of The Simpsons in the glory years, because apparently he would throw in all the classic lines that you remember, all the zingers are apparently his, even though it's got Conan O'Brien's name on the on the script, or Al Jean. There's guys like George Meyer who were just in the background just throwing in ideas, and you got the best bits in it.
Yeah.
Or Brooks as well.
Yeah, there's a really good round table discussion between Conan and some of those writers that we've both watched. Definitely check that out if you're a mega Simpsons fan.
Yeah, search on YouTube for Conan O'Brien.
Simpsons writers,
I think that'll
do it.
Yep.
But yeah, I was saying about how the frantic number of jokes, it's something that I think 30 Rock is a really good live action example of that, where every character will just, even if they're just there to get the character from point A to point B, like, oh, there's like someone waiting for you in the foyer, like there's going to be at least 1 or 2 jokes in that simple conveyance.
Yeah. And I mean, one of the other things too, which I think 30 Rock kind of does a bit too, but
cutaways.
Cutaway gags, I mean, The Simpsons really started it. Family Guy has done it to death and absolutely killed it to the point where The Simpsons has actually reacted and gone, we're not going to do that as much anymore because everyone else is doing it, so we don't need to.
Yeah, Family Guy did it in like the most, I don't know, how would you describe the difference?
Well, I'll describe it the way that South Park described it in their Cartoon Wars stuff, where they likened it to,
it's a crutch,
to manatees putting random balls in a hole, and then whatever balls came out is like, so Bill Cosby at the circus with leprosy or something like that. You know, it's like, and they'll put that into some kind of cutaway thing that does not fit in anywhere.
Yeah,
and
it would just be Peter going, damn, that hurts more than the time Bill Cosby,
because we had leprosy at the circus, and oh, but geez, I got my leg fell off, and then it's all, you know, that's
it. Is that an actual example?
No, no. I just just made that. That just came up with that.
We keep talking about Bill Cosby.
I could write for Family Guy. What? Yeah, it's because he's in the news.
Yeah.
But you know, and in that South Park episode where they absolutely take the piss out of Family Guy, I think Cartman's running around going, everyone keeps saying you're funny like that Family Guy. I'm not funny. Family Guy's not funny. It's not great. And they absolutely slayed it.
Yeah.
And pointed out that, and something I can't watch Family Guy without thinking about now, is that because they go to these cutaway gags so much, every time it comes back, they have to summarize what the plot is again. So you can catch back up with what you were actually watching. Because distracts you so much, then the plot becomes kind of forgotten.
Yeah, it's secondary.
Yeah, and
like,
so...
if you think back, what's the funniest clips or moments that I can remember from Family Guy? It's probably going to be one of those cutaway...
Yeah.
Like satire of you know...
Yeah, or it's a chicken whatever. Fight, you know, like... Yeah. Or one of those things that goes on forever, you know.
And I think the South Park has a real respect for what The Simpsons is.
And, absolutely. And the Simpsons Did It episode is the ultimate homage to that. And, you know, it's them getting down on bended knee saying, we would not be here without you.
You've done everything.
Yeah, you've done it all. You've kind of ruined it for us, but in the same way, we are eternally grateful.
And you can tell that it actually came from people pitching ideas in a writer's room. And having the other person say, oh, The Simpsons... already did that.
Yeah, yeah. You can tell it's ultimately frustrated writers when we're going, well, let's do an episode about how The Simpsons have done everything.
Yeah.
Yes! Well, we can use all these 20 ideas we've just been through today.
Yeah. I think Community is another series that's fairly current that has taken a lot of those cues as well. In that it's... I don't think they have cutaway gags as much.
Not as much, no.
The writing in that... it's similar. It's just a really witty writing where there are jokes laced into every sentence.
Yeah.
It's not like here's a really long setup for a punchline like you do get on other shows.
Yeah. Like, say, Big Bang Theory or something like that. Which is... this is probably a good way to segue into about this, The Simpsons' impact. We were talking before about could there be another show that... is as big as The Simpsons in terms of cultural impact and pop culture currency. But when we kind of, upon that, you mentioned you'd heard somewhere about how shows aren't quite as big anymore because we have so many choices.
Yeah.
They don't become all consuming. As much as Game of Thrones is sort of just seems to be everywhere.
Even though neither of us have watched
it. Yeah, even though we're still kind of familiar with it.
Breaking Bad was the last one that it felt like everyone was watching at once.
Yeah, yeah. But even still, it's not as big as The Simpsons was at its peak.
True. Or anything in the 90s.
Well, yeah, no. I mean...
Let's throw out Bill Simmons' name because we've talked about it for the last...
Because we just steal all our stuff from Bill Simmons.
I was listening to Simmons talk to Malcolm Gladwell, a TV critic or just an all-round writer.
Writing dude.
About how, you know, the best rating episode of whatever show now, Game of Thrones, let's say, doesn't even come close to what a random episode of Melrose Place or Beverly Hills 90210, like a mediocre 90s drama or sitcom would have a lot more ratings than now, just because, as you said, it was kind of pre pay TV, cable, all these options, pre Netflix, pre YouTube, and everyone was, they didn't have the choices.
No, everyone, and even in America, you know, having cable was kind of like a privileged thing anyway, so you were mostly stuck with your basic TV stations. And it's funny what people do watch now, and you can kind of like in terms of ratings wise. And I don't know if this is just for 2014-2015 ratings period in America. I don't know if this takes your Netflix and any of those
TiVo and stuff
into consideration, but in the key just across not any demographic but just across everything, the biggest, most watched show in America is The Big Bang Theory.
Which, how many million?
21.3 million.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, sorry, no, just behind NCIS, which is 21.4 million.
Right.
And the biggest new drama of last year was not Empire or Gotham or any of these other shows, it was NCIS New Orleans, which I didn't even know existed. I knew there was a Los Angeles version, but not New Orleans.
Yeah.
You know, these are not Big Bang Theory and
that would
NCIS. They're formula shows. There's nothing groundbreaking about it. That's what people are watching.
I'm guessing that's like the highest rated episode of that year as well.
I don't know how those figures have worked out, but it might be on an average actually.
Yeah, because I know that The Walking Dead on average is like around 10 to 14 million.
Oh, okay.
And that's one of the biggest. It's usually in the top. Four or five.
It's not one of the biggest on, say, like a cable
It's on AMC, which is cable rather than free network TV. But So.
But yeah, none of these are getting anywhere close to phenomenon wise that The Simpsons achieved. I mean, you know, the first couple of years when The Simpsons came out, you couldn't go anywhere without seeing just mountains of merchandising. Like, they just went nuts with it. Everyone had the school bag, the skateboard, the t-shirt, you know, the breakfast cereal. That stuff doesn't happen now except for, like, say, Star Wars. You know, it doesn't happen with TV shows quite as much.
Yeah, and you can pretty much now be obsessed with a TV show that someone else has never heard of.
Yeah.
Quite commonly, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I was trying to think of an example that I've come across, but I don't watch that much TV.
You don't watch enough TV.
No, I did watch Better... I finally got around to watching Better Call Saul, so that was...
Good for you.
That was my dabble with something new. We did... there is a little bit of news that we were going to talk about, too, that Matt Groening's actually going to do a new animated show on Netflix.
That's true.
Which I am...
Which is called...
which doesn't have a name or a plot or anything now. It's just... People are just excited about the idea of him doing a new show, even though Futurama has been killed off on at least two occasions.
It's been going for a couple of years now, so it's probably done. But
well, he still seems to think that it will come back. They're still shopping it around to another network. I think the cost of making it is prohibitive,
right?
Because it doesn't quite rate as well as The Simpsons, but of all those shows that you listed before, all the animated ones that have come in the wake of The Simpsons.
Adventure Time.
which is still kind of kidsy, but slightly adulty. It's kind of in this weird middle ground. South Park, I think, is perhaps the cleverest because and not in its early seasons, but when it started to get its satirical edge, its writing is as good or if not better than most TV around. But Futurama, I think, is seriously criminally underrated. Its first four or five seasons before it got axed are just gold after gold. But the other thing, too, that it did, which it comes from The Simpsons as well, this is something I think that Matt Groening and that really instilled in it, and it probably comes from James L. Brooks more than anything in The Simpsons that Groening has taken on into Futurama, is that having some serious heart and emotion in episodes. Like, there's... the episode with Fry's dog. I don't know, are you familiar with?
Yes, I've seen this.
Yeah. And, you know, that makes grown men cry, that episode. It is just so sad and touching and beautiful. And it probably packs more of an emotional punch than any episode of anything The Simpsons ever did.
I don't know. The Simpsons has definitely, I was just thinking as you were talking, it's definitely, I think it brought that to cartoons first. Like, think about, you know, Mr. Burns with his teddy bear.
Yeah, but that's kind of played... That one's played for joke. I never got that as an emotional thing. It was just a joke. And because Burns is such a disliked character, you can't ever really empathise with him.
Okay. What about Timmy down the well? Or Bart selling his soul? There's just... And there's people who die, like when Lisa's saxophone...
Bleeding Gums Murphy.
Yeah, like that's pretty...
Well, I was just going to think of Lisa's Substitute.
Yeah, that one too.
That
I knew that Lisa had another
serious
one.
Look, there's good, solid emotional threads through them, but none of them compares to the same tearjerker level as the episode about Fry's dog.
Okay. Well, that's interesting.
I absolutely say that.
I guess when it's Futurama, they can play a few more risks than The Simpsons. But
yeah, maybe.
I do think The Simpsons has had its moments of heart. Especially the relationship between Homer and Marge, obviously, it's a, you know...
Well, the couple of episodes with Homer and his mum are actually really good examples of that.
Another one I was reading about.
But I will say there's a really... The very last episode of Futurama, they've written episodes... I think there's... This is the fourth episode they've written where they think it's going to be the end of the series, and this one is the last one to date so far. But it basically involves some sort of time travel plot that's very cleverly plotted. But at the end of it, Fry and Leela, who end up as a couple, is this spoilers? Are we going to spoil territory?
No, go for it. It's cartoon.
Okay. Fry and Leela end up together, and basically the rest of humanity gets wiped out, and they live together as the last people on Earth and have a beautiful life together. And then at the very end of it, Professor Farnsworth turns up and manages to go, I've managed to fix the problem in the space-time continuum. You can come back with me. If you push this button, you can come back and go back to where you were before the time went kablooey.
Yeah.
But you'll forget the last 70, 80 years that you've just lived together. And they have this choice and they go, okay, let's do it again. And they push the button. And it's a really beautiful moment.
Yeah, right.
And it's just, there's so many things that, so many times Futurama have done that. And
I have to agree with that. Like there's one where they, Fry's playing the weird instrument.
Yeah.
That projects like.
A holophone.
Yeah. That projects their feelings.
Yeah.
I've only seen it once, so I can't remember.
This is the one where he's got worms in him that are making him smarter and better at things.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. But there's something really emotional in that, in the way that he relates his feelings for her.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did that really well. I need to check out some more Futurama.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think you're right. It is underrated. I think it's seen as like The Simpsons' little brother, like kid brother.
Yeah, it's its weird kid brother that
sci-fi
was right thing. Into sci-fi. Yeah. No one quite understood. But it's it's really quite brilliant. And again, it wouldn't exist without The Simpsons, but it works on a completely different kind of tangent, I think. It dials up that emotion in a lot of ways that Simpson never quite got to.
Sure. And another thing, while we're talking about things that The Simpsons has dabbled in, is, and they had a lot of help from Seinfeld, but basing a story around some people who do some really bad things.
Go on.
You with me? So, I guess up until, you know, 89 or whenever, the characters of this show had to be likable. They had to be, you know, moral. They had to be upstanding for audiences to want to watch them, I guess.
Somewhat. There are exceptions, but yes, go on.
Yes. But you had Homer, who's pretty much a despicable buffoon in a lot of instances.
Despicable. I think that's the wrong word.
If you knew him in real life, you probably would hate him.
Well, that's the whole premise of the Frank Grimes episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
That what if he was someone from the real world actually had to deal with...
Yeah. So he has got a heart of gold, but he's incredibly selfish. He's like a child.
Yes.
And I think that's Grimes' point.
He does have a bit of a mean streak occasionally, the way he deals with Flanders, but...
Yes.
You know, that's kind of...
But it's also...
It's bordering on sociopathic sometimes.
Instances like where he gets a DUI, but he puts Marge in the driver's seat, so she has to take it on.
Mm.
There's things that happen like that. And even, I guess, Bart selling his soul, and there's...
Well, you mentioned the Down the Well one where...
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, that just... Those episodes are kind of used in the old... let's learn a lesson today, kids.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know,
and that's where cliche. I think they had a help from Seinfeld, because Seinfeld had the rule of no learning, no hugging, no learning.
Yeah.
That, you know, it could be funny to have these people do bad things and, you know, they get their just desserts, but they don't learn anything from it.
Yeah.
And
which is why the last episode of Seinfeld is so great.
Yeah.
Because it all kind of comes crashing depends back down
you,
on them.
Depends who you talk to, but yeah.
I think it's so great. It's because it all really catches up with them in a really good way.
It does. It points out how terrible they are.
Yeah. And they are actually genuinely bad people.
And people didn't like that for whatever reason. But I think it was fine. Yeah. I think it gets too much criticism.
Mm.
I got you back, Larry David. But I think the way that The Simpsons resets at the end of every episode, there's no really story arc, is quite interesting. And Seinfeld had to a similar extent, there was no learning.
Yes. Seinfeld still had it felt like a more of an arc, because there's...
Things did...
I guess characters that are in there for certain stretches, whether it be Elaine's boyfriend or be the guy that Jerry's fighting.
If you watch them all in a row, there's an arc to a season, like
George and Susan or...
Yeah, or Jerry's family's in town or whatever. Yeah. And if you watch them in isolation, you don't really lose any of what that adds.
Yep. Just going back to the point about The Simpsons, like doing bad things and not having to sort of feel that you couldn't root for them in some way. I don't think it ever quite got to the level of Seinfeld, I don't think. And there was still a lot of learning lessons and stuff at the end of it.
But they all also get to the end sometimes and they say, like, what have we learned?
Well, there's one episode, I'm trying to think what one it is, but They're trying to find a moral at the end of it, and they actually can't. Yeah. But that's sort of like a one-off thing. Although there's some that fall into really interesting gray areas. One of my favorite episodes of The Simpsons is the one where Homer gets into the NRA, and it's the gun episode, basically. Oh, yeah. And I love the bit at the end where Homer throws the... Marge goes to throw the gun in the bin and sees her reflection with it and looks at it and goes, oh, I look kind of cool, and puts it in her bag and walks out. And it's like, wow, what is the message or moral in this episode? Because the whole thing has been Marge going, how dangerous these guns are. That little moment is such a great little flip on its head.
Yeah.
Which I guess is probably what you're kind of where you're going with the Seinfeld thing. I think
the moral is guns are cool.
Well, the moral is that there
that's the
there
argument
isn't really
the other side,
there isn't really moral. It's a gray area. People do weird things.
Yeah. No, I think that the way that The Simpsons was okay with their characters doing bad things that, and along with Seinfeld, has influenced a lot of shows we have now.
Now, let's go back to the original one of the original things we were discussing here. Yeah. I want to hear your argument as to why Seinfeld is better than The Simpsons.
So, let's see if I can get this across.
Okay.
I just think that all the things we've talked about for this about The Simpsons are true, but Seinfeld as a live-action comedy, I think it was more postmodern in the way that it didn't have to teach you a lesson. It didn't have to, you know, make you feel good. It didn't have to accomplish anything. It was a show about nothing, and it was self-contained, and it was completely reliant on the fact that it was just funny, and they were able to pinpoint, as pretty much what Jerry Seinfeld is famous for, everyday things that are funny. And there's not a day that goes by where you can't be reminded by something on Seinfeld, or if you're with a Seinfeld fan, you can just say that's just like that episode of Seinfeld. And I'm sure you could do that with The Simpsons. They have had 30 years worth of episodes to help them along the way.
Yes.
But I just feel like, that setup is so original and so influential. Like, I don't think you can really explain to people now how culturally significant it was at the time, that people were talking like the characters from this show, they were dressing like them. Like, the lexicon created by Seinfeld is probably above any other series that's only run for as many episodes. Like, think of like yada yada, think of terms like close talker, and there's just...
People still refer to Festivus.
Yeah, Festivus. Yeah. And, you know, there's so much lore and in jokes like Art Vandelay Industries, Cramerica, and just catchphrases that they started. Like, there's food named after them, there's food like that they started. Mm-hmm. The big salad, it's just endless.
Yeah. Hmm. You might be right in the sense it's possibly the greatest sitcom.
Mm.
It's certainly the most influential sitcom. I still don't think it's greater than The Simpsons in a lot of ways, because I think The Simpsons hits on levels that Seinfeld deliberately avoided, but because The Simpsons hit those levels, it makes it a richer experience. Which, and again, it's this emotional stuff we're talking about, you know.
But if you look at...
And I know it's deliberately trying to avoid that, but...
I mean, it's kind of like comparing, I don't know, Coke and...
Apples and oranges.
And Pepsi, in some way.
Cliches, no, another cliche.
It's not like that at all. But they're quite different.
Yeah. I'm just saying, if you had to say, one's the biggest.
And another thing about Seinfeld is broaching issues that wouldn't be talked about in a comedic setting, like, you know, people dying and people trying to commit suicide, and, you know, making jokes about someone participating in a walk to benefit AIDS. Like, usually you'd be like, oh, we can't have anything funny to do with AIDS because it's in bad taste.
Yeah.
But they find a way to do it.
Mm. And
then episodes like The Contest, where they just talk around a topic, and by talking around it, it makes it even funnier.
Yes. Yeah. Which is, and, you know, it's kind of poking fun at the social mores of the time that people don't want to talk about those things.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is something The Simpsons have done as well. I mean, The suicide thing, it did make me think of one thing I don't like about The Simpsons, and it's these constant references to Mo attempting to commit suicide, like it's a joke.
Yeah.
That is probably not the best way to deal with it.
And what about, like, Homer strangling Bart? Like, does he still do that?
Yeah, he does, yeah.
I'm sure that that gets complaints from the PC warriors.
Probably, but it's been getting complaints since day one. I think they decided to stick with it just because it got complaints. But,
yeah, right.
Things like Homer's Phobia, the episode where John Waters guest stars as a character that is obviously, well, to everyone else, is obviously gay, but Homer doesn't get it. You know, that's a really great episode, the way it deals with the issues that it's talking about.
But you're just making me think again of Seinfeld and not that there's anything wrong with that episode where, you know, they didn't want to...
Which is a catchphrase that's now in the lexicon as well.
Yeah, it is. And it's like they didn't want people to think they were gay. Yep. But they wanted to make sure everyone knew, you know...
That they weren't.
Not that there's anything...
That they didn't have an issue with it, yeah. The number of things that have entered into the vernacular from Seinfeld compared to the number of things that have entered the vernacular from The Simpsons?
I think The Simpsons might have some catchphrases, but I think Seinfeld has everyday terms.
Okay.
Can we pause and I can write them down?
No, it's okay. No, I believe you. I'm trying to think of Simpsons ones that beyond... Like dull
is just it's in the dictionary.
Or cromulent, which I saw.
That's just a Simpsons nerd thing, though.
No, I saw letters in The Age the other day that referred to that. That someone threw it in into a letter, and then people wrote more letters in The Age referring to cromulent, and that it was a perfectly cromulent word. And I mean, how much of it's catchphrases, but how much of a thing is like just going donuts or you know or anything?
Yeah, okay, that's
free goo, you know.
I'm not saying The Simpsons has an influence. I'm just there's a MP3 that I downloaded from Napster or something back in the day, but it's like a song where someone has just laced all these Seinfeld quotes throughout it. I think there might be a quote from every episode.
Yeah, right.
But it's done into sections, and there's like ones where they're describing characters, and then there's just people saying terms.
Yep.
And it's just when you listen to it like that, it just shows you how amazing this show was.
Yeah, it's as much as I hate this phrase, but its ability to hold a mirror up to society.
Yeah.
It was kind of unparalleled in sitcoms at the time, really.
Mm. And I've talked about this before, but the way that they. And I have a really hard time expressing this, but they have a relationship that resembles something on this show.
Yeah,
now as a gag, or they have something like, for example, there's the Covenant of the Keys, where Kramer betrays Jerry's, trust by breaking into his house with his keys, and he takes the key back, and it represents something.
Yeah,
and I think that they were the kings of doing that.
Yes, your original argument was that they were the first to do that, but I think it's basic. Yeah, it's fairly basic symbolism.
I said they made it a thing.
They did make it a thing, but I've since seen early seasons of Friends where that was a really common.
Yeah, thing and as I well. Think that they got it from Seinfeld.
They might have done. They might have done.
There wasn't as much crossover as you think between those two shows.
How long did Seinfeld run for?
It ran from 1989 to 1998. Okay. And I think Friends started in 1995.
Okay, yeah, right, yep.
Which is like 75% into Seinfeld.
Yeah, all right. We probably should... Well, this is supposed to be about The Simpsons, so we probably should just go back. That's my fault. Get you just going on your Seinfeld thing. Because, you know, these last podcasts was partly about, let's just talk about shit we want to talk about. Yeah. What's fun to talk about? The Simpsons, Seinfeld. Mm. Yeah, cool. Maybe 90s grunge music, but no, we won't go there.
Sorry.
Final thoughts on The Simpsons? Do we want
to... I'm looking forward to one day sitting down and catching up on 15 years of The Simpsons that I missed.
Because you haven't really watched it since the golden years, effectively, have you?
Yeah, I watched a couple episodes. I watched a few episodes from like season 19 and 20.
Not
like I haven't sat down and watched a whole season.
Yeah.
I've never really sat down and watched whole seasons of this.
No, I haven't either, but it's just because it's just has always been on every day, so you can just watch an episode or two.
Yeah. But I mean, it's going to keep going. I predicted that it would finish the last year. Of it. And Harry Shearer at one point wasn't going to sign on, so it looked like it was going to happen. But it looks like they're back for more.
But they always said if Harry Shearer doesn't sign on, then we will replace him
with what, an impersonator.
Yeah, with an impersonator, numerous impersonators.
I guess that's the thing. Like, The Simpsons could go on for another 30 years potentially, because there are talented voice actors who can sound just like anyone. Like,
yeah, and I mean, we now have a Kermit the Frog that doesn't sound like quite like Kermit the Frog, but no one seems to mind that too much. That still happens.
They couldn't find someone that sounded exactly like Kermit the Frog.
I think it's Jim Henson's son that does it. Oh, well. So it was kind of like, yeah, okay, you can.
Yeah, you can do it.
Yeah, that's a pretty good Kermit you're doing there, fella.
But they've replaced, I mean, they don't come up that often anymore, but Bugs Bunny and, you know, Daffy Duck, they've been replaced like 5 or 6 times, and you would not know the difference.
Yeah, it sure as hell ain't Mel Blanc doing it. That's no. So, you know.
I think, what's his name, West, who from Futurama?
Oh, Billy West.
Billy West has done some of those characters lately when they did a Brendan Fraser movie.
Oh, 10 years ago.
So I guess it's possible.
The Simpsons theoretically could just keep going.
Yeah, and you've seen video clips probably of actors doing, like, here's every Disney character ever singing Frozen's Let It Go.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And I'm sure that there's someone who can do every Harry Shearer and every Nancy Cartwright voice.
Yeah.
And they will be a lot cheaper.
Probably, yeah. The hardest one, I think, is going to be if Yardley Smith dies. I don't know. I've never heard anyone impersonate Lisa very well.
Interesting.
Even Bart's kind of tricky, but because it's that thing of a woman doing a boy's voice. There's some quality to it that is really hard to capture.
There is nothing that turns you off quicker than a new voice actor that sounds nothing like the one that you love. Mm. So, I don't know. You have to be careful with it.
It's funny, you get used to it, though, because I remember when in Futurama, when the guy who ever played Hermes stopped doing the show and there was a new Hermes. But now, if I catch an old episode, I'm like, that doesn't sound like Hermes anymore.
Right, yeah. It's nothing that gets the fanboys more irate.
But do you have a specific example? Yeah. What is it?
So Metal Gear Solid is one of the biggest video game franchises in PlayStation history. And David Hayter, who's actually a screenwriter, was the voice of Snake. And he got replaced with Kiefer Sutherland recently. Oh, right. And it's
wrong.
Yeah, it's right. Just not doesn't feel right, doesn't sound right. Poor Kiefer has copped it from the fans quite a bit, but yeah. Don't do it unless you have to.
Yeah, well, I mean, if they had replaced Harry Shearer, I would have been really interested to see how it turned out, because he plays dozens and dozens of characters, so.
Yeah. And they also changed Ash on Pokemon to another woman.
Right, okay.
He's a kid, but, you know,
okay.
Anime. I don't watch Pokemon anymore. I'm 28 years old.
I've never had anything to do with Pokemon, so I'm going to take your word on
it. Your loss.
Yes.
Well, thank you for listening.
Thank you.
And as always, Simpsons is up on Facebook or Twitter. Hit us with your best quotes. Tell us which has had more impact, Simpsons or Seinfeld.
Yeah.
And Matt's Twitter handle, @DrMattNeil. I'm @Jono himself. Have a super terrific week.